Talk given Saturday, 9th November, 1974. We all know that the world is deteriorating rapidly. It is the belief of most people that if we look back into the past and study the ways in which similar situations were dealt with, we would obtain the right clues to deal with our problems today. Is an error. Even in terms of our dualistic outlook, what applies to the past, even though it may be similar to the present, is not a reliable guide for dealing with the present. And even if we go out of the dualistic situation, if we try to find something which is real and worthwhile, then we will see that trying to solve anything in the present, in the light, as we call it, of the past, is fundamentally a mistaken way. The resolution of human difficulties does not come from the same plane as the human difficulties. It comes from a transcendent depth alone. All human difficulties are the difficulties of living people. Our problems are living problems. And that which has happened in the past, the expression of problems in the past, is a dead fossil. So that fossil is useless for the present. The living problems have to be resolved in terms of something which is the source of life itself, which means transcendence. It is precisely because we are out of joint with truth, with the living reality, that we find ourselves in the situation where problems overcome us. Our business, if we are wise, if we are truly practical-minded, is to be reinstated into harmony with transcendence. Otherwise, whatever we do will only be a counteraction of the present state. And a counteraction will have all the qualities which produced the difficulties, the turmoil of the present state. That is why the past has to be rejected. We must see for ourselves in the immediate present. Then intelligence comes into play. Otherwise, we conform to a set pattern which has over and over again proved its futility and led to suffering. It is very important to see this. See this very clearly. So that the mind, perhaps for the first time in our lives, emerges into a state of freedom by allowing all its shackles suddenly to drop off one. The disentangling of the knots in the mind and the heart is not a question of time. It is of the timeless. And in being timeless, it is instantaneous. This is something which we find very hard to see. First, we have to see this, really see this, not merely by the exercise of our logical intellects. That won't do. Let the intellect, let the emotional side of us, let all that is in turmoil just be quiet. And then this power to see will be there. If an analogy is helpful, consider a scientist using a microscope. What has he to do with that microscope? That microscope has to be perfectly steady, unmoving. The specimen which he is examining has to be in the right position so that he can focus it. Now he will be able to see the fact of that which he is examining. So you see, the elements are there. The complete stillness. The perfect poise. The right focusing of vision, which in our case means the right focusing of our attention, attentiveness. It has all got to be there. And if we walk down the corridors of memory and search in the past, we shall be in a state of turmoil and in a state of uncertainty, because it is extremely doubtful whether anybody has ever been able to give a perfectly truthful, objective, dispassionate description of what happened in the past and what were the exact methods used in the past. It's only where technical things are concerned, machines and engines and that sort of thing, that everything is written down exactly as it is performed, and you can make another machine do the same thing. But you and I are not machines. And we can't deal with life in that way. We have to deal with it in a living way. So you see, any attempt at counteraction is bound to be a failure. Any attempt at referring to that which is now past, dead, will not promote or liberate life in its wholeness, its healthiness, its purity and its perfection. This can be done by seeing now. At this point, we must bear in mind that the act of seeing now does not mean a seeing once and for all. The seeing has to be continuous, because life is continuous. The use of sight, the use of your senses, of your mind, is a continuous living process. So one has to be continually seeing. That means continually awake, continually attentive. Eternal vigilance, the price of peace, the peace which is that sublime, unoriginated nirvana. And the person who is in that state is the instrument through whom flow those streams of life and action which can produce real good in the world in which he lives. And when I say real good, this is what I mean. The good which has promoted healthy life. Health of body, health of mind. And if that is there, then men and women the world over will be influenced by that. And in some measure or other, that which is entangled, which is in darkness, which is in misery, will at last begin to find some sort of healing, being made whole. When men and women are whole, all the so-called problems of politics and economics and whatnot, all the disasters which overtake us as human beings, they will receive the right sort of treatment. In fact, one will not need to treat the disasters, because one starts off a totally new mode of action in life. And when that starts, the whole aspect of disaster is out of the situation. Your man of the world will immediately say, right, apply your philosophy to the starving millions in India, say, or in Africa. Of course those millions of stomachs will not be fed at once. Of course not. But when the whole attitude of those who are working there, helping there, those who are suffering there, undergoes this transformation. When the whole attitude undergoes transformation, every moment of every day, the action of every one of them will be correspondingly different. You act according to your desire, your motive, and your intelligence at work. Just to have a good heart is not enough. Too many people have good hearts but muddled heads, and they make a mess trying to fulfill, to satisfy the goodness of their hearts. We all know that. So you see, the motive, the intelligence, and the action will all go together, provided there is the seeing of the truth of the thing and thereby being in tune with the transcendent real. And that is all that matters. Because whatever else we do is doomed to death. Everything that is not in line with transcendence is doomed to death. The death, which means not just the death of the body, which means the sterility of intelligence and action. Mankind has become castrated, so to say. It has become impotent. It has lost its backbone, its vitality, its vigor. Because the source of its vitality and vigor is in its morality and in the use of intelligence, which means the strength and the power to put aside all its conditioning from outside. And thereby look into itself, see its own desires, its own drives, understand them clearly. And in the understanding, that desire energy flows into right forms of expression. This is the kind of thing we need. And this is the meaning of living the religious life. Do realize that. It is this radical transformation from within. And it always has to be a radical transformation for the very simple reason that all situations of crisis, whether they be today, yesterday, 1,000 years ago, always have this aspect of the urgency of change. And this urgency for change and this radicalness becomes more and more intense as the centuries pass by, because we are growing, we are moving forward. And in that moving forward, there's an accumulation of energy and expression which makes the present situation one which never existed before. And it is always more intense. So you see, what is implied in religious living? Because religious living means live human living, which is very different from the kind of living that we see around us, which is inhuman to the degree of incredible brutality in every way, in every aspect. So, is that living? The way people live today, is it living? It is a deliberate destruction of oneself and of those around one. But this live human living has tremendous implications. To be live means that the whole of you is at its intensest peak continuously, in your sleep also. When you relax, when you rest, when you're working, when you're thinking, everything, in everything, there is the intensity. And that is the livingness, the vitality. And human, well, we have discussed this word human again and again, haven't we? Human, the happy creator. He through whom proceed the streams of creative action, which are acausal. The laws of causality don't apply to it, which is consequenceless for the individual himself in this sense, that he who lives creatively acts so completely and perfectly that everything is worked out at once, then and there, from moment to moment. There is no leftover, no debt to be paid afterwards, no credit accrued to him which he has to extract from the one who is in debt to him. It gives you a totally different, a vital outlook on the meaning of the word karma. Now, consider very carefully one of the supreme aspects of life. It comes under this one word, love, a monosyllable which has had an extraordinarily dominating influence over the lives of men, of all human beings through the ages. It's a bird which has been on the lips of mankind falsely through the ages, excepting in the case of the holy ones who had realized truth, purity, wisdom, selflessness, and therefore in themselves were the embodiment of this mysterious transcendent reality we call love. But you can count those people almost on your fingers' ends. The rest of the world knows nothing about love. Nothing at all. Attraction and repulsion, desire, lust, the longing for gratification, for possession, the dependence upon one another, which is called love, and when something spoils that dependence, that love can easily turn to hate. All these things man knows. And associated with these things, he knows jealousy, envy, ambition, and all its evil domination over other human beings. But he does it in the name of love, and so forth. These things he knows. But this reality which is love, he doesn't know. The poets have talked about love healing everything. Indeed it does. But has there been healing? Do we see healing throughout man's history? The poets have talked about love as the supreme expression of the divine. And in putting it that way, they have pushed the divine out of our lives. It has become an ideal. It has become a thing of the far off. A thing which characterizes not me. I am a poor, miserable human. Therefore, love is not of me, for me. You see how it originates. That word is defined for us. But this, which is the illimitable, the immeasurable, that which cannot be caught in the cage of knowledge by the mind, in the cage of thought, this thing, love, has been defined for us from our childhood onwards by relating it to our desires, our sensations, our passions, and so forth, which are all ephemeral, aren't they? If love is desire and its gratification. What happens when the gratification is over? As indeed it is over. Every expression is a limited thing. It comes into being, it grows, it dies. That's the end. It's finished. And yet they say love is immortal. If love then is the expression of desire and its gratification, then it cannot die. It cannot begin. If it is immortal, if it is eternal, then there is no beginning to it. There is no growth to it. Even the scriptures use phrases like this: greater love hath no man than this. But that which is comparable, which has therefore size, is a limited something. It is an entity. It comes into being. It dies. It is not immortal. It is not the reality. So, what do we do about it? Do we look into our own minds and hearts in order to find the meaning of love? No mistake could be greater. Because all that we'll do will be to project out of our minds a picture, not the reality. A man can marry a living man can marry a living woman. He can't marry her photograph. And vice versa. That which is projected out of mind is the photograph. It'll be an illusion, a make-believe. So can I search for the meaning of love or the ways of love? I can't. Can I ask another person to tell me what is love? I won't know what he's talking about, excepting that I'll know the image that he is presenting to me. It is not something which can be handed over to another. It is not something which can be received from another. But you see, the whole world has done this. I love you, as the world says, and I want you to love me. This is the thing they say to each other. Quite impossible. It is the very death of love to do that. Love is totally free. That which is not free is license, bondage, the progenitor of misery, heartbreak. And it is this license which is misinterpreted as freedom by mankind. Mankind's great curse: I do what I like. And he has blasted his own life and the lives of all around him with that. I do what I like. But love is totally free. Because it is reality itself. Doesn't begin, doesn't grow, doesn't die. It has no particularization. It has no expression in any sense of the word expression within the sphere of our dualistic life and consciousness. Within the entire sphere of discriminative consciousness, love has no expression. You see, love is creative. And that which is creative implies creative power, which is coterminous with creative action. It is not as if creative power is a something which exists by itself, and then it throws out a creative action. Creative power is never static, doing nothing. That is the meaning of creative power. We can store up electrical energy, electric power. We can store up this, that and the other energy and use it when we want to. That's a time process. This is a timeless reality. The absolute, the eternal, everlastingly in action. Never is inactive. One of the great meanings of Sri Krishna's words in the Gita, Arjuna, if I did not perpetually engage in action, these worlds would fall into ruin. This is something of the nature of love. How are you going to hold it in the mind? How are you going to make a thought of it? How are you going to come to know love? You can't. You are it. You can be it. Creative action. And this creative action completely transcends the entire sphere of our life enclosed within discriminative consciousness, vijnana. It is so near, so real, so absolutely here, and we have this most unhappy genius for pushing it right out of our lives. How do I see this reality then? First I must see and really see that I do not know. I don't know love. I must see, clearly see, that I must not seek to know love in the usual intellectual sense. Knowing in the usual intellectual sense. It cannot be done. And I must also realize that it can never be known in that manner. Knowing, which is the same as creative action, is being the thing. And Adam knew his wife, Eve, and she conceived. But his wife never knew anything. He didn't know anything in the ordinary dictionary meaning of the word know, and in the ordinary everyday meaning of the word know. So you see, when I see that I don't know, I really know that I don't know. I know it intellectually, I know it with every cell of my being, that I don't know. What happens then, when I really see that? I don't flounder about like a fish fighting for its life when it is thrown out of the basket in which it is caught in the sea and thrown upon the land. I don't do that any longer. I am still. I am silent. I am quiet. This is the important thing. When I have seen very clearly, I do not know, then I am still, I am silent. I am not demanding an answer. Note, I am still and I am silent. I am not demanding an answer. I am not searching for something. But I am in a wide awake condition. Just wide awake. Realizing that I must let the truth happen, come to life, light up like a flame inside me. This is important, because you can deceive yourself that you're being very still and silent and following out the rules, and that's the mistake. You can deceive yourself. And if you deceive yourself that you are still and silent, when you really are absolutely hankering after the answer, the secret to be given to you, which will bring you eternal pleasure. You see, when you are in that state, then your attitude is similar to the one who is still and silent because he knows he is defeated, because he is in despair. He is soured and embittered in the deeps of his soul. You see how and why we suffer? You know, we all suffer this way, don't we? Right from infancy. In some form or other. The parent who's impatient with us. The teacher who is like Medusa's face for us. The mother who forgot to kiss goodbye just before going to sleep. And so on and so on. We say petty little things, but good God, it takes only a petty little knife point. Doesn't need a mighty sword. If it reaches the heart, you're done. Things like that. So, not the attitude of despair, not the attitude of the soured person, oh, well, there's nothing like it, I mean, it's all talk, and or it's not for me, it's for somebody else. This is nonsense. It is for me, too, and it is in me, too. Because it is in me, these 15 billion cells keep together, just like the nucleus of an atom, the power that keeps the protons together, which normally should repel each other because they all got positive charges, but they don't. There's this extraordinary nuclear attraction which keeps them together, although they are the same, they are positively charged, not positive negative, not a sexual attraction. It is like that. It is this mystery of love that keeps even the very body together. Now, when I'm really still and quiet, and intelligence is really awake, I'm truly alive from within. I am capable of being human, the happy creator. Then is it possible for me to feel jealous in this situation, envious in that situation, angry, impatient, annoyed in this, that, and the other situation? Is it possible? And why is it impossible? Because your total mode of awareness is the transcendent mode itself. And this power of transcendence, which is love, the great healing power, the great creating power, functions freely and unhindered through you, the psychophysical being. You will not ask for love then. You will not want to give love to anybody, as if you or I could give love. Can you or I give space to anybody? Or take space from anybody? Space is a wonderful teacher. Meditate on space. Meditate on space every day. Akasha and prana, which go together. Akasha and prana. Space and creative life energy. This thing, this which is immortal, eternal, can neither be asked for, received, or demanded by another and given. It is there as the absolute total reality. You and I everlastingly float in this illimitable ocean of love all the time, and we don't know it. We are blind to it. And we deliberately remain blind because we want our particular desires satisfied. We want our particular fears allayed in our way. Love doesn't bring security, nor does it bring insecurity. It has nothing to do with all these opposites. Pleasure, pain, happiness, misery, none of these things. Love is this mysterious something, this total reality, this transcendent power. And if and when we at last really sense it and are suddenly enjoined with it, conjoined with it, one of the supreme meanings of yoga, conjoined with this creative power, you see. When we are like that, then all the passing dualistic phenomena which characterize our everyday state enclosed within discriminative consciousness, within vijnana, all of them are transfused with something wonderful. Please don't jump to the conclusion that pain and disease and everything will disappear. Not a bit of it. Every one of them will be there. And they will be there even more intensely than they were there before. Because before we were not sensitive enough. Now we are sensitive to the nth degree. But there is a newness, a magic about it all. We are learning. We are learning, which means we are constantly awake and awakening, Awakening is a vibrating. It's not a case of being like that, and then you're like that, and you're awake. It's not static. It's dynamic. You're vibrating, you're awakening all the time to the transcendent realm. And through you, that energy of love flows out into the world, healing it. I don't know how, and you don't know how, and neither you nor I will ever know how in our dualistic sense, which makes us compare, limit, measure, define, derive conceited satisfaction that, oh, aren't we nice people doing all this good in the world. Cause for loud laughter in the heavens. And on earth too, because the heavens are here. Through the magic of love. But there'll be signs. And your neighbor will somehow see that sign. And there will come a light in his eyes and a smile on his face. There will come an offloading of his burden and his sorrow, his darkness and his depression, a release from his fears and anxieties. And you will know that you have been a wonderful instrument of love through whom this has taken place. A truly wonderful instrument, if he to whom that has happened himself will not know that it has happened. When the joy of love, when the joy of life bursts through you, you don't know it at that moment. You know it afterwards in retrospect. Therefore, if the joy of life is bursting through you every moment, then there's no retrospect. Therefore, you never know it. But it is there. You see, the secret of creation, of creative action, of love. You see its nature, its eternity. There is no such thing as time in which to know it and spoil it. Now, such men and women in the world, and what will happen to violence in the world, to greed and lust for power and possessions and pleasures? What will happen to those? Will they not vanish like horrible dreams which beset us in the days of our disease? And will not that be the true healing of mankind's distress? Will not that be true action instead of being a mere counteraction, which is but the devil's instrument for further torture for us? Counteraction. and will not such love open up vision? Will it be possible for you or me to escape the divine vision then? The light which shines during the day as well as during the night. Listen, the old Rig Vedic poets knew this. Surya, the sun by day, Mitra, the sun by night, and Savitri, the sun that shines both day and night. You may say, why are you now looking back into the past? I am not looking back into the past. For many years I looked, and it was in the past. But having seen, it is here now forever and ever. Surya, Mitra, Savitri, they're right here. Such is religious living. And we are coming to that time of the year when, in a large part of the world, the festivity of the Lord of Love is being observed, or people try to observe it. Calmly look at what the people will do to celebrate this festivity, as they call it. The pain they will inflict upon other creatures, depriving them of life for their own pleasure at the dinner table. That's just one tiny little aspect of it. But so much else goes on. This awful organization of pleasure, of festivity, in the name of the supreme thing, in order that our stupidity, our ignorance, our pathetic inhumanity may find expression. But if you and I see, really see, in the seeing is set, liberated that energy, that power, which heals the diseased action of the world. And in that is true religious living by you, by me.